Welcome to Manage Your Tools. Today's cast, part two of Managerial Economics 101, 102, and 103, Reporting, Delegation, and Coaching. The questions this cast answers are, what is managerial economics? What does managerial economics mean for delegating? And what does managerial economics mean for coaching? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Hey folks, if you're a manager in a larger organization and you're thinking that there are a lot of managers who could benefit from us, please get in contact with us. We are experiencing a surprising increase in the number of clients, corporate organizations who are asking us to come in and deliver training, not just virtual anymore, but now in person. We're talking about, I think we've been asked to train over 1,000 or 2,000 managers in the last month or so. There seems to be a real groundswell around companies recognizing that the lockdowns and working from home were deleterious to their culture, and managers discover that it's much harder to manage at a distance, which you probably have learned and we have been talking about for the last couple of years. So reach out to us if you think your organization could use some help. You can send an email to Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, at manager-tools.com, or you can send it to me, M-A Horstman, at manager-tools.com, and somebody get back to you pretty quickly.
Let's move into Managerial Economics 102. That is Managerial Economics in Delegation. This is something our conferences, virtual and in person, our effective manager conferences focus on heavily in our discussions of delegation. Managerial economics also applies to delegation. The derivation or extension of a principle ought to be obvious after our previous derivation of reporting on the status and work. When we first mentioned managerial economics, it was in relation to the reporting of the work. But the most obvious example, frankly, the most obvious application, I should say, is actually in delegation itself.
We did talk about this in terms of reporting. It's important, I think, to mention this. When the work is done and the person who's next to consume it doesn't know that it's done, I want to be really clear here, y'all. There's a gap in productivity. The work could be being consumed and it's not. Now, one of the things we talk about is that there's always work not being done. So if you're comfortable with the idea that, hey, this thing is ready for use and not in use, fine. If you've said that's not high priority right now, okay. And if your direct has done it and you need it and you don't know that it's done, you have a gap. And for me, this became really, really obvious when I started working remotely, because in the office, I found in that environment, like in person, people tended really to, they would see you and they'd remember that they had something due. And so they'd mention the status to you. So you got more frequent kind of organic, like we chat all the time, updates. I still found that those generally were not, hey boss, it's done. Those were, hey, here's where I'm at. When you go to a virtual environment, and so many of us have in the last few years, because this cast is coming out for the first time in 2022, you find that with distance, communication is decreased. And that means the communication about whether work is done or not decreases. And therefore, the gap between when it's done and when it's in use by the next person is getting bigger. You're losing time. And if your team can close that gap or shrink it, then you can be the team that is getting things done more quickly. And if the market is, I mean, the market's getting, well, not this week, but the market in general is growing, right? Capitalism, growth. Yeah. So keep in mind that other teams are letting this gap get bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is one of those places where you can eke out a lot more efficiency. And also, if you set a date and time for your deliverables, if you assign tasks as deliverables and you set them as a date and time, y'all, you can put them in your calendar.
Yeah, you can track them.
Pro tip, I have reminders in my calendar. You know, I say to Andrew, by 12 p.m. Pacific on Friday, February 18th, send me the completed analysis, right? And good news, when I look at my inbox around lunch, which I do, I see that reminder in my calendar. I see, oh, Andrew owes me something at noon. He doesn't, y'all, but as an example, I look at my calendar. And if it's not in there, I send him a note. Hey, dude, I've got that this is due. I was going to work on it Monday morning first thing. Please let me know if I'll have it by then. Mm-hmm. Because I can schedule time to work on those things that my directs was supposed to have completed if I know the date and time that they'll be done and I know whether they're not.
Absolutely. And I mean, another thing that's hard in the virtual world, Kate, that I've found is finding opportunities for items, behaviors to give feedbacks on, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I don't even see them anymore. Kate just gave you a prime example of something to give feedback, positive or negative on, right? If they exceeded that deadline, if they haven't met that deadline, you're welcome. Two birds, one stone.
Okay.
All right.
I apologize because again, we're being less high D than
I know,
maybe
right?
we should. Maybe some people would prefer. Let me say it that way.
Yeah.
Managerial Economics 102
yes.
says.
Yes, relative to delegation.
Yep. And even task assignment, more generally, that if a manager and a direct can both accomplish a task, the manager should strongly consider delegating that task to their direct. While it's really not fashionable, as we mentioned previously, to talk about employees as cheap labor, it is simply an economic term. Mm-hmm. They're people, we care about them, but the principles of managerial economics demand that we consider costs managers create when we choose who in our team accomplishes the task.
Mm-hmm. And just a segue here, because we're into the second part of this podcast. If you're not really totally on board with what Kate just said, go back and listen to the first part of this podcast, where we talk about, in a more in-depth fashion, managerial economics as it pertains to organizational life, so that that cheap labor comment doesn't sting quite as much. That podcast will help. Go back a cast. Listen to that one.
You know, Sarah's in a better mood than me. I'm not worried about it stinging because this next one is going to sting if we're talking about organizational things that happen. Mm-hmm. Lots of managers, and we know this to be true, y'all, because we meet more managers than anybody else on a weekly basis. I met 60 new managers this week. Many managers balk at delegation.
Yeah.
For one thing, we're good at individual tasks. It's probably why you got promoted, because you were good at creating results. And we don't think of ourselves as being good at managing.
Right.
So we tend to hoard tasks that we used to do. I've described this to people before. It's kind of like, my precious. You know, people say to me, Kate, I'm so, so busy. I say, okay, well, let's delegate some stuff. Let's look at your list. And I say, what about this? And they say, oh, no, I couldn't delegate that. And that happens a few times.
Yeah.
And then I say to them, in order to highlight their behavior to themselves, you're really getting pretty Gollum about this, this set of stuff. Like, if you need time, you got to get rid of some stuff.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that y'all don't have a justification for it. I know.
There's so many justifications for it.
It's so easy to say.
For keeping it.
Well, I'm better at this because I have practice, or it's faster.
Right? Oh, there's so many reasons. You're absolutely right. The one around I'm better at it, around skill set, around essentially control of accuracy. This is a classic example of individualized thinking, right? The manager includes in our calculations the organizational imperative of managerial economics and puts the work where it can be done both well and at the least cost. But many of us worry, though, right, about the drop in quality in respect to getting the task's result when taking something new over. That is, most of us, when thinking about, should my directs take this over, compare their directs to themselves.
Which isn't fair, right? Because your direct doesn't have the same level of practice as you. You've been doing
you're
this.
You're unreasonable. We're saying, guys, you're unreasonable. That's what we're saying.
Well, last cast, we talked about.
I am too.
Irrational, right? It's irrational. Yeah,
irrational, it is.
And here's why, y'all. Because we have proof that the organization can withstand that temporary dip in quality because it happened when you took over the tasking.
Absolutely.
If you are better at the task than you were 6 months ago when you took it over, you're an example of an increase in value via practice, right? Practice or proficiency via practice. And another thing about that, y'all, if it was true that the organization cannot withstand that temporary dip in quality, you could never hire another new person ever again, because I promise you, when you think about hiring, and I'm willing to bet 75 to 80% of the people listening to this cast are thinking, Kate, I really need to hire somebody. Kate, I've got this hole. If we hired someone, we'd have so much more work coming out of the team. Mm-hmm. Y'all.
Well, they know nothing, you. They do not know anything.
The new person that you hire, exactly. You're imagining a perfect new hire, which, by the way, because you think of yourself as rational, mm-hmm. you forget that you're actually not that good at hiring. Your brain is a weird sauce of stuff. And so when you think you're hiring someone who's great, in fact, what you're imagining there is a future in which you hire someone with no horns, only right. a halo. Here's the thing, y'all. They all have some form of horn, all of them. No one is perfect, which means better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Yeah, consider absolutely. The directs you have and think about what are their skills, because the new person, you don't know what's wrong with them yet. Now, no offense to new hires. Sometimes they're amazing. We've recently hired some really fantastic people. However, that dip in quality is going to happen when you hire. So you darn well better start with the people you have, because delegation helps the organization most easily grow productivity, which is a responsibility of all managers, an important one. Mm-hmm. By transferring work from a higher cost center to a lower cost center, which is manager to direct, after the initial period of change, which is growth, and it's always, by the way, much shorter and much less painful than managers want to admit. You're imagining something worse than what will actually happen. So after the initial period of change, the output of the team is unchanged, but the cost of what the manager and the directs are doing and have been doing has gone down, because the manager is doing the work. It's like magic.
And that's not it. Like, that's not where the benefits in this stop, guys. The organization also gains the time in potential productivity that the manager used to spend doing the delegated task.
Yes.
Right? Now, assuming, and we're going to assume here, that the manager uses their time wisely, delegation leads to paying less to produce the same output, so less profit, while also producing more with the same number of people. Again, more profit. Now, that's not even, I mean, if that's where the reasons ended, but they're not. Mm-mm. There's another reason not to worry about this drop in quality. Again, it's our frame of reference. If we've been doing a task for a while, we got good at it. And it wouldn't hurt to teach our directs what we have had the opportunity to learn.
Yeah, honestly.
We're comparing our experience against our directs inexperience, and it's unreasonable, right? It's
you're being irrational again.
You're being irrational.
Ding. We need like a bell for that.
The standard is not in terms of getting this task done. The standard of quality is not as well as you do it now, but instead, or rather, it's roughly as well as you did it the first time you were expected to do it yourself. Because I tell you, your boss suffered fools for you. And you can do it too.
Again,
pay it forward.
You're being unreasonable. You're being irrational. Because you're still in your role, indicating that there were no organizational repercussions to yourself, or when, you know, when you did it, when you first were learning, is inaccurate. And again, y'all, we're not saying your fears are invalid. They're totally
not at
valid.
All. I have the same ones myself all the time.
Oh my gosh. I had something.
I got to talk myself out of it, but I have them.
All the time.
It's normal.
2 weeks ago, I delegated something and I thought to myself, I don't even want to. I thought to myself, I don't want to inflict this on Andrew. I genuinely had that thought. Like, I thought to myself, should I delegate this? And I thought, nah, I don't want to inflict this on Andrew. And then I thought to myself, whoa, whoa, whoa. First of all, it's not really inflicting it. I do it. It's not that horrible. Also, there are 5 things that he doesn't know yet that he'll learn through
by doing this
one process.
Thing.
You're actually continuing to not create, but you're continuing to support inexperience in your directs because of this fear.
Yeah. So it's absolutely true.
And I would even go so far, and this is not the forum for this, I would go so far as to state that I think that to be true of 90% of your fears around delegation.
Oh yeah, I agree.
All the stuff people tell me about why they won't delegate, all the Gollum stuff.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. Your fear is valid.
Absolutely.
It's going to happen. It's going to be okay.
It is going to be okay.
And we're going to teach you how to delegate.
Yeah, let's walk through delegation. That is, let's walk briefly in this cast through the Manager Tools delegation model. Note, folks, again, if you're relatively new to the Manager Tools audience, we have got a whole series of podcasts on the delegation model. So we're just going to whip through it real quick so you have a high level of it. It's in the larger cast itself is called The Art of Delegation. Search in the search bar for The Art of Delegation. So first, we state our desire for help. So it would sound like, hey, Kate, I'd like your help on something.
Sure.
Next, we tell them why we're asking them. You're really good at relationships with other teams. And then we ask, because this is a bottom line up front model, for a specific acceptance. That is, will you please take over responsibility for collaborating with the logistics team on the new product changes?
Absolutely.
Right. That's where we pause and wait. And then we describe the task in detail. Okay, cool. So from now on, you'll run the weekly change meeting, as well as take over the shared Google Sheet where we share tasks and status. Next, we'll go over the deadline and reporting standards. So for the first week or two, just keep me in the loop on issues. And then we'd normally suggest you say at the end of that, is there anything else you can think of you might need from me? So let's, because I feel like that was all intertwined and intertangled, Kate, let's start from start to finish. I'll delegate to you. You okay. Be the direct, I be the manager.
Right.
Okay. Hey, Kate, I'd like your help on something.
Sure.
You're really good at relationships with other teams. Will you please take over responsibility for collaborating with the logistics team on the new product changes?
Yeah, I would, yes.
Awesome, thank you. So from now on, you'll run the weekly change meeting, as well as take over the shared Google Sheet, where we share tasks and status. For the first week or two, keep me in the loop on any issues. Is there anything else you can think of you might need from me?
Can you add me to the invite for the meeting?
Yes, ma'am. I will add you to the invite for the meeting.
Fabulous.
Perfect. Awesome, thank you.
Y'all, if you want to be an executive, you must master this before you begin that rise. Managers who don't delegate will never make it higher. It's crucial to be capable of delegation. And another thing about this, y'all, is let's not keep our directs from the good stuff.
Yeah.
It's not just pushing work down to a level where it is more cost effective. It's also elevating those people at that level to higher work.
Right. It is an infliction. Like you said a minute ago, Kate, don't think of it as giving them more work. Think of it as giving them an opportunity to become prepared for when the organization calls on them to be a manager, helping them get exposure to other people or other systems or products or whatever it may be in your organization. Think of your delegation, you're having them do their manager's work as an opportunity, not a punishment.
Hey folks, just another pitch for you to become a licensee. And actually, if you're listening to this and you're not getting emails from us, I don't just want your email address. I really encourage you even just to become a free member. Free membership gives you access to the forums where a lot of questions are answered every day and where many of my historical answers to questions that we haven't got around to doing podcasts on are there for you to review. Also, the ability to download documents. We have a bunch of free documents and templates and plans and scenarios on the website. Those are all available for free for members. But really, I want to encourage you to become a licensee. Probably the biggest reason is because of executive tools. We're doing a cast coming up here. I just finished writing a cast about directors, about how directors have to deal with their managers and their directs. And if you don't know, a director is somebody who manages other managers, which is sort of the beginning of executive life. So I'm going to encourage you to become a licensee so you can get access to executive tools We just finished doing a great series on the War Room, and we'll be putting that out in Manager Tools as well, just to give you a sense of the kind of stuff we're doing in Executive Tools. Become a licensee. It's our best value.
That takes us then to the last part of our guidance in this cast, Kate. We're on Managerial Economics 103 in coaching.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about two previous applications of managerial economics, mm-hmm. and our focus in those was on cost reduction.
Yes.
With coaching, Managerial Economics 103, ME 103, which I can't get out of my head as Mechanical Engineering 103, which was
every time I see the abbreviation, I'm like,
it's a difficult,
is this university class?
It was a difficult class, I will say that. ME 103, Managerial Economics 103, turns towards value rather than cost reduction. So if we go back to our previous guidance from our previous podcast, The Coaching Dilemma, let's imagine thought exercise. We have four directs, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta. Their mothers obviously didn't love them to have named them that. Alpha is performing above the standard that we would describe it as exceptional. Some would say she's ready to be promoted. Bravo is above the median requirements for the job, doing very well. You could build a team around guys like Bravo, solid, dependable, growing well. Charlie is a below average performer relative to the standard, but quite fine. Not everyone can be above average. You worry about him, and he's mostly okay. Delta, our D player, is unfortunately not meeting the minimal standards for his job. He regularly misses key monthly metrics, though there are moments when he shows promise. Last month, of his five metrics, he missed the three big ones and barely made the other two less important, but still metrics involved. Now, the dilemma. If you had 90 minutes a week for a series of weeks and were forced to spend time with just one of them, with whom would you choose to spend it?
Mm-hmm. Now, please assume here that you're spending time with all of your directs in one-on-ones, right? You're not only spending 90 minutes with a single direct and not speaking to the others. You're doing one-on-ones with all of them. You're having meetings with everyone there, or you're giving everyone feedback, perhaps even coaching all of them. Mm-hmm. This is a 90-minute bonus. You've got 90 minutes, can only spend it with a person. And
most
the classic
people,
answer.
Yeah.
Right? The classic answer, the thing that most people think about when they think, okay, I've got these four directs, is I'm going to spend time with Delta. Delta's the one. Delta's the lowest performer. They're the one that needs the most help. And Delta is the wrong answer.
Because of managerial economics.
Mm-hmm. And it's normal to think it's Delta, right? That's the coaching dilemma. The podcast goes all through this. We care about people. We want them to be successful. But Managerial Economics 103 says we should actually spend our time with Alpha.
Ding, ding. Okay. Why? Some of you are thinking, but why? Mm-hmm. Because the organization will get more value from the improved performance of Alpha. Y'all,
right.
Any percentage improvement we get from Alpha starts from a bigger base. So if you assume a similar percentage improvement from any of our directs, Alphas will be the biggest. It's the 80-20 rule, really. Further, Alpha is closer to having more impact on a broader part of the organization. In fact, she probably already does because she's known to be so good at her job. And when I say 80-20, y'all, I mean classically, and people, I say this a lot and people don't like it. So I am aware of the fact that this is prickly. 20% of the team does 80% of the work. Increasing the capability of that 20% gives you an exponential increase on the value of and level of effort of work involved. Let's go a step further here. Let's talk about retention. I mean, if you want to talk about managerial economics, you could not come up with a better topic in which to discuss.
Right.
Right? Who do we wish most to retain?
Right. Are you trying to keep Delta around?
No, we are not.
No.
No. We care about Delta. And there might come a time where, should we have to choose, we would choose Alpha.
Right. But what if, in this case, we spent that 90 minutes that we could only focus on one of our directs, we spent all that extra time with Delta? What if we save Delta? And in the process of saving Delta, we lose Alpha.
Terrible.
If you're going to manage by the squeaky wheel around here gets the grease, The goodwill will roll elsewhere. She will find another job where she is more appreciated.
Yeah.
And this isn't even an emotional appeal. Like, we're not even trying to, like, break your heart by talking about whom we care about, or it's just managerial economics. And that's where these decisions come from, right? You want to save the person who, to Kate's point a moment earlier, is doing 80% of the work on their team. If 80% sees you spending all your time with 20%, 80% will find a new home. I promise you, she will.
And always remember that retention is one of the biggest ways in which we create value in our managerial economic space. Because if you're losing people, that's expensive. Yeah,
that's expensive.
So if you're thinking, oh, well, I want to spend time with Delta or even Bravo or Charlie, we understand, we empathize. And y'all, success comes from exploiting strengths. And at times, occasionally, sometimes, yeah, we have to quiet our emotions and ask, what's the right professional, and in this case, managerial economic choice? And y'all, I would much rather retain someone who is working at the level of alpha than retain someone who is working at the level of delta. And we run that risk when we make choices around coaching and who we spend time with and who we focus on improving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that takes us through our two-part cast. And I hope by now, throughout our conversation, we have managed to convince you that managerial economics pervades our work. Now you know how to think about it, how to apply it when thinking about being an effective manager in terms of assigning work, delegating work, and coaching your directs.
To some extent, y'all, this should be just another reason why what we've been suggesting is valid, right? Mm-hmm. We've been suggesting these things all along. And if you're involved in an organization where you're making these choices and you're saying, I'm going to apply these tools, and you want another reason why these tools are valid and supportive of your organization, managerial economics is one.
It is. It absolutely is.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks, all. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week. Have a good one.
Bye, everyone.